How's everyone doing? Good morning. What a great morning. Following the band and Chris, I get all nervous now. It's like that's hard to follow those guys. That's amazing how God anoints them. So why don't we just pray and we'll go home early. All right, we're going to continue our series. We're going to do some Thanksgiving stuff in November. We still are, but just feeling like we need to continue to deal with the unseen and understand the power of our God. The enemy's main tactic is to distract us from God's power and to have us lean on our own abilities and our own means to do life, and secondly, to speak to us in such a way that to live our world looking at just the natural, and that God is a liar. Has anybody ever heard that? You know, that if God really loved you, something wouldn't happen? That you wouldn't be in this situation, that kind of thing wouldn't happen? That's all the enemy's tactics to try to draw us away from who God really is and his power and his ability to accomplish what we would consider to be not good stuff, to actually work it out according to his promise that it will work out for good. So we're going to look a little bit at some of the dimensions that God operates in and that you and I operate in so that we can understand God is far greater. Now, we did a study on the immensity of God. Today, I want to talk about how does God operate in that immensity? Because I want you to focus on God. When you understand the greatness and the power and the authority of God, that changes how you look at stuff and how your faith walk is. Yours and my walk in faith is based on what I believe to be the right way to go, what I believe to be true. If I believe that God is not really in charge of everything, if God cannot work this out for good, if God's way of dealing with me right now is somehow poor strategy, then I will choose to operate in my own way. And so we want to break some of that down. So to overcome the unseen obstacles, we must understand, one, the wisdom of God. Sometimes we limit God's wisdom to our wisdom and think that he kind of thinks like we do. And we need to rely on his authority to do what he wills and his power to accomplish it. Why? Why do we need to understand that and lean on that? Well, have you ever found yourself staring weeks, months, and years into the future and thinking things will get easier than they are now? As if at some point in time, we will not be engaged in a spiritual war. That at some point in time, there is no spiritual war. Because that's what would make everything nice and easy. That's a fallible thought. You know, I've been walking with Jesus almost 33 years, and that day has never come. Now, there have been times and seasons that have been incredibly difficult, and seasons when there has been a kind of a calm rhythm to life. It was just kind of moving well. Yet, at every stage of my life and at yours, there have been difficulties. But God has given us enough grace and has given me enough grace to stay the course. And faith enough to trust him in what I don't understand, and hopefully what you don't understand. See, I have enough grace from God to tackle today's trouble and the problems that attend my current stage of life. I can, and you can, only handle what I must handle because God gives me the grace to do so. The crazy thing about grace is that you are only given it as needed. Do you know that? You are given it as needed. If you don't have children, you don't need to have children grace. When you have children, you need children. And when you have more children, you need more grace. Because, see, when people say things like, I don't know how you handle something, I don't know how you do something, what they don't understand is you don't either. But what does happen is that you get the grace you need to handle it today. And along with grace, God gives us the faith to walk today, realizing that even though I don't get so much, I know He does. And so I choose to trust Him, even in great disappointments and tragedies that come upon us. We are in a spiritual war, and we are deployed as God sees fit. Where you are at in your life right now, you are deployed there. Or else we're not in a war. See, we tend to think we make the decisions of where we are deployed in life. You, when you enter the kingdom of God, numerous changes take place in your life. One is your who you are. You now are a child of God. You also become an ambassador. But you also become a soldier. And the soldiers don't determine their own deployment. God determines that for us. So He will give you all that you need, just like a soldier, if they are to properly handle the deployment they're at. They are given everything they need for that deployment today. And so you have, and I have, what we need. And we will engage the enemy. But know this, God's in charge. And He has made promises that things will be made right and that God wins. And since you're on His side, you ultimately win. And that's what I want to talk about today, is how does that happen? Well, in Matthew, we get a glimpse of a centurion, a Roman soldier. And you know, Paul, in much of his analogies on what the Christian walk is like, he uses military type of, you know what I'm saying. Big words. Help me, people. What is it? Yeah, he uses that. Thank you. Terminology. I know, and they let me do this. So, this guy is a centurion, a Roman centurion, which means he has authority, centurion, over 100 people minimum. Sometimes those guys were at such a rank that they were in charge of the deployment of over 200 guys. So this guy understands military, he understands authority, he understands power. So he goes to Peter's town, and he's in Peter's town, and the town called Capernaum. And he comes up to the Lord, and he requests something of Him. And this guy has the discernment, the insight. He's not a religious dude. He might have been a Jew, and he might not have been. But he had a discernment and an understanding of the power and authority that Jesus had that many people didn't. And this is what takes place. It says, when Jesus, Matthew 8:5, when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to Him asking for help. Lord, he said, my servant lies at home paralyzed, suffering terribly. Jesus said to him, shall I come and heal him? Jesus set him up. He said, do you need me in order for your guy to be healed, for me to show up there to heal him? He put him in a trick box to see what this guy thought about him. He already knew he's God, but he wanted this guy to say it out. And the centurion replied, Lord, I don't deserve to have you come under my roof. Just say the word and my servant will be healed. He said, hey, Jesus, I understand your position. I would never ask someone with your kind of power to come in. All you have to do is say the word and it'll be done. That's the way it's done in the military. I don't go and fight everything. I'm at this level of function. But I see you, Jesus, functioning with authority at a whole nother level, that you can speak a word to a disease and make it go away. And this is what he says back to Jesus. He says, Listen, you don't come on. That'd be a shameful thing and be disrespectful to you. So he says back to Jesus, he says, listen, I myself am a man under authority. I know what it means to follow someone that's above me. I can see that you follow someone in the unseen world that's above you, that gives you the authority to deal with the seen while you're also in the unseen. He says, I get it. I see who you are. I don't understand all the religious parts about that. I'm not a Jew. I don't go to synagogue. I don't know all that stuff, but I see your position. He says, listen, I'm a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. I give orders, and it happens, is what he's saying. And to that one, come, and he comes. And I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed and said to those following. So Jesus, he kind of turns and he starts to talk to his disciples and those that are following him for whatever reasons they're following him. And he says, truly, I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. He says, truly, in my time ministering, I've not found one Jewish person with the understanding that this guy has of my authority to direct by simply giving an order and things happen, whether they're in the seen or the unseen world. This guy operates with 100 people in the seen world, and he knows that his directions come from someone else that tells him what to do. He gets it. He says, I see this guy's got even greater. Don't come into my house. Are you kidding me? All you have to do is give an order. And Jesus said, I have not seen such great faith. I've not seen such understanding. Now, this guy also knows that if Jesus said, no, I won't heal him, Jesus had that power. Because sometimes in our thinking about God is we have authority over him. And we give him our directives of what we want him to do, how we want him to do it, and when he wants to do it. And he ought to skip to that. Or I'm not going to believe in you anymore. I'm not going to trust you. You disappointed me. You let me down. Well, what that really says, and it falls right into the demonic realm of you get to dictate to God. One of the understandings of spiritual warfare is who is the commander? Who are the soldiers? You guys all get that? He could have said yes, and he could have said no. His word was power. If he said no, there's nothing that was going to change that. Then that guy would have left. He got it. Permission denied. He says, listen, I say to you, one, he has great faith. He gets it. And he says, I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. This guy gets who the king is. He says, I'll tell you what, there's going to be a whole slew of people that get it. And they come from the east and west. They're not necessarily those that are calling themselves the God people. Hey, that's us. But see, a lot of times we don't get that. We don't think God really has that kind of authority. Because the enemy has done a great job at tricking us and telling us he doesn't. And the enemy's second ploy is to say, I'm as bad a guy. I have as much authority as God does. Because some of us are super more afraid of the enemy than we are of God. Jesus one time said, "What are you? I'll tell you who you should be afraid of. The person that can kill you and put you into hell. He's got that kind of authority. The enemy doesn't. I do. So we need to understand who we're lined up with. That we are lined up with a person with authority. Now, I want to take us. And then Jesus said, verse 13, it says this. Then Jesus said to the centurion, go, let it be done just as you believed it would. Let it be done, believed it would, that he be healed? No, not necessarily. That Jesus had the power to heal it. And I'm asking him to use that power. He said, you believe that I have the power? I do have the power. And in your case, go, it's done. And his servant was healed at the moment. Now, I want us to understand and clarify a little bit more this power of God. So I'm going to be talking about dimensions today and how they work. There are 10 of them. And I know immediately what you're thinking. Oh my God, we'll be here all afternoon. It takes Joe 15 minutes to get one point across. Luckily, we're not going to go all through all of them, but I'm going to give you enough to help you to understand that God knows what he's doing and you can trust him, and that you know he'll give you the grace to handle with what you don't understand today. So, and I'm going to use the story of Job, a little bit of it anyway. So, in Job 1:6, we have a statement here. And you know, Job was the first book, they believe, written that was compiled into the Bible. So it's the story of suffering. It's a story of a spiritual dynamic going with the seen and the unseen. And so it starts off with this in verse 6. One day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. Key word in that sentence is came. That another word for came is summoned. So you need to look at this as a military type of thing. He summoned the angels and he summoned Satan, which means God has authority over them. So when you're seeing this situation, look at them and picture in your mind a formation. They're all standing in formation in front of the Lord because he summoned them to his presence. You guys get that? They are all angels and demons under the authority of God. And so the Lord said to Satan, so he picked him out of the crowd and he said this to him, where have you come from? Satan answered the Lord, from roaming through the earth, going back and forth in it. So right there we understand a dimension that Satan has and a dimension he does not have. He says, I have come from that place, because I'm in your heavenly place now talking to you. I have come from that place and I have roamed back and forth in it. What that tells us is that Satan is limited like you and I. He cannot be everywhere at once. He cannot be there and he cannot be here too. He can only be one place at a time. So he operates in the first three dimensions that you and I operate in, which is length, like a line, my length, and he has some control over it like we do. When I stand straight, I'm a certain length. When I squat down, I'm a different length. I have some control over it. He also operates in width. He's a being. He's moving back and forth. So he's taking space. But right now, width. Width is, I am this wide. If I lose weight, I'm a little less wide. I have some control over that. Also, space. The enemy takes up space. I am moving from here to here to here to here. I'm spatial. You and I'm taking space right here. If I move over here, I am no longer taking space there. I'm taking space here. And I have some control over that. The fourth dimension, so Satan is limited like us, like the angels. Some of us think that the angels don't, you know, they just kind of float around and they're ghostly. Like, they're not like God. God is spirit. He is everywhere present. His creation is limited. He puts that on them. Satan is far below God. And then the fourth dimension is what we would consider time. You and I live on a timeline. I cannot be at the beginning of time. I cannot be at any other time than now. I live in the present. I operate in the present. That's why God says, don't worry about tomorrow. Don't worry about the past. You're here. I am 62 years old. I cannot be 35. I can pretend I am. I can fake myself out. I can put all kinds of stuff on me. I can do whatever I want. I am 62, and that's where I am on the timeline. The enemy is on the timeline too. The enemy does not have the ability to go back and forth on the timeline. He is in the present. They happen to be on a much longer timeline than us, but nonetheless on a timeline. That is a dimension that does not hinder God. What's the fifth dimension? Anybody know? And this is all taken, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the super string theory. The super string theory, giving you guys some science here, but I'm going to add the spiritual component to it to put God in that mix. The super string theory says there are 10 dimensions. Funny that rabbis way back in the time of Jesus said that God operated in 10 dimensions minimum. And so the first four, height, width, depth, and time, we operate in, the spiritual operates in. The seventh dimension is where angels and demons operate in that you and I don't, in the sense of being able to physically go there. Well, Joe, what's the seventh dimension? Glad I asked myself. Seventh dimension is the ability to go to differing dimensions and operate in them. So the dimension you and I live in is the natural. Bible calls this the abode of God, the heavens, completely different dimension than this. Angels and demons travel from this one. Where was Satan saying? I'm going back and forth among the earth. Where was he summoned to God? Up in the heavenlies. He was able, like the angelic beings, to traverse both of them. And you know what? God gave us that ability too, in prayer and in position in Christ. Though we live here and we will not be able to physically, and I'm talking spirit physical, go to the heavenlies till we pass from here. And like Chris succinctly said, that is a far better place. We will. My children live in that realm. I traverse it through my position in Christ. I have been seated with him in the heavenlies. I pray and penetrate the heavenlies. One of the things the enemy will try to get you not to do is pray. Because he doesn't want you penetrating that. He wants us always focused on the dimension we walk in. So that we live by sight, we live by how we feel, we live by what circumstances are, and we think this is it. So you and I, ultimately, and the scripture tells us in the beginning, those two dimensions were together. Sin tore them apart. The enemy was the root cause of that. In the end, in the book of Revelation, they come back together. And we operate forever and ever in the fullness of who we were designed to be. That's why I tell you, when people leave this dimension and they enter into the heavenly dimension by way of death, they are in a better place, but they're not whole yet. Why? They don't have this body that was meant to operate on this dimension. And so when we get our bodies back, that's the big deal with the resurrection. We get our bodies back, but we are also now completely spiritually connected. Heaven and earth meet. And we operate dimensionally as we're supposed to. Now the enemy and the angels do that. We do it in a gap. What type of way? Is everybody following me on that? So we still, God has gifted us with that ability in a different way until we pass. So he said to him, after he says, where have you come from? And we see the dimensions that the enemy is limited to. Because one of his prideful things is to say, I can do everything God can do. I can control everything God can control. No, he when God called him, he came. And God now puts him in a trick bag. Some of you know the story, but it's a great trick bag. So, in verse 8, and the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Great question. The word considered means have you thought about? Because why? God knows him. He knows he's been thinking about that guy. He knows that in his traveling through the earth, he's seen this guy, Job, and he's wondered, why is this guy so into God? He's offering sacrifices for himself and for his kids and all this stuff. Why does he do that? See, and that's the same thing we do. We have this capacity in our brain, and really it's a need to try to figure out what God is doing. So God called Satan, he goes, hey, and now you've been thinking about him. What do you think my boy has been doing? What about him? And then God says this to him. He says, there is no one like on earth like him. He's so special to me. He is blameless and upright. You've tried to find his weak spots, haven't you? And you kind of see that this guy walks the walk. He doesn't just talk it. And he's a man who fears God and shuns evil. And so he says, Satan, what do you think about all that? Because he knows Satan's been trying to figure out what is this guy's deal. And see, Satan doesn't get the heart connection. He thinks everybody's in something to get something. He doesn't understand the value of serving and how that blesses when you help someone and when you give and when you do these different things and when you lay your life down for something. He's the antithesis of that. So what did he think? He responded to God and he says, does Job fear God for nothing? I figured it out. I know what his game is. Satan replied, have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? I know why he likes you. You protect him and you give him everything. You take that away, he says to God. He'll curse you to your face. This ain't no relationship. This is you give to him, so he's good to you. He says, listen, I figured it out. And then he says this, you have blessed the work of his hands so that his flocks and his herds are spread throughout the land. I'll tell you what, God, but now stretch out your hand. Same thing, give a command. So let it be written, so let it be done. He says, stretch out your hand against him. What'll he do? And strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. He said, I figured out the way it works. What Satan is saying is I know the motives of people. You and I fall into that too. When we look at some, we are told by God to judge behavior. We are told never to judge motives because we don't know. When I think I know, when you've heard people say that, I know why they're doing what they're doing. What you're saying is you've assessed all the possibilities. You've thoroughly vetted them, and you've come to the correct application for why they do what they do, and so therefore you will respond to that according to how you think you ought to respond. That's a satanic ploy. I only know where you're coming from if you have the grace and the safety to tell me where you're coming from. And even you don't even know why you do all the stuff you do. So Joe is going to figure out why you do it. When you go, I've talked to so many people, why do you think you do that? I have no idea why I do what I do. Why? Because our hearts are deceptive. That's what the scripture says. They're deceptive. They trick us. We think we're doing it all out of purity, and it ain't. Well, the enemy does that. And God knew he came to that conclusion. And so God put him in the trick bag. Say, you think you know what it is? Oh, this is going to be good. It's going to get written down, too. And his place, church, is going to be reading it in about 3,000 years. And we're going to show everybody how I put Satan in the trick bag. Because he thought he knew what it was about, and he don't. Because he thinks he can think like me. Which is the 10th dimension. The final dimension in the string theory posits this. It says that all known possibilities have been completely vetted. And the choices that could possibly come off of those have been thoroughly thought out. And the person that can operate in the 10th dimension can control from the very beginning of something exactly how it will end because they know every possible way it could possibly go and they have a plan to make it that. And so they will work everything to that. Who says they do that? Oh, God does. The enemy can't. Now, what does that do? That means that God, how many of you know, operates in the 10th dimension? He vets everything according to his will. And he already knew every possible motive in Job, just like he does in you and me, and how he sets up the world. He knows every possibility that can happen. And you know what the end part of the 10th dimension states? That if there is anything outside of that, he knows that too. Or that is encompassed by someone that can operate in the 10th dimension. Only God can operate in that. And so he already knew that his thinking, Satan's thinking about Job was flawed, and he was going to expose it for the limited ability Satan has. And he was going to demonstrate through all the book of Job, even when Job says, I don't know why you're doing it, I'm not going to curse you. I will never curse you. I know you're God, but I don't get it, and I think I've been done wrong. It's like, hello, who can't line up behind that thought? You know, and it could have been bad. Wish I would have had a bad childhood. You know, what happened there? Where were you when this happened? What was going on here? And we posit all these possibilities. That's why God says, live in today. Hey, you only have control over the timeline. Now, I, on the other hand, God says, I have control over it all through it. And where you're at now and what you're in now, yeah, that's all part of my possibilities and working it out and to achieve what I'm going to achieve. And this is the thing. I said I'd work it all for good. And I got a ton of other promises that I said I'll do. Either you believe me or you don't. So I suggest you have the faith like a centurion. That if he says no, he must have another plan. And if he says yes, hallelujah. It works out. I'm not saying I agree with it all the time, because I'm Joe. And sometimes I think Joe and God, you know, let us reason together, God. And I will explain where you kind of go a little off on these things, because I am so broad in my understanding of the possibilities. That's why I don't know if it's a proverb or a psalm, it says that God laughs when man comes up with his ideas. He goes, that's so cute. So listen, Satan wants us to, in this spiritual warfare, think he can move along the timeline too. That he can go in the past, that he can move in the front. He's limited to the present. In fact, Peter, when he's writing in one of his letters, states that the plan of salvation has been in effect since the beginning. And that's just one aspect. That's just one thing. And that even the angels look at it trying to figure out exactly when it's going to happen. Because why? They're living in the present. And like I said, their timeline's long. So God operates freely in the fifth dimension, moving through time, setting up everything the way he wants it to go to achieve the goals he has. He has moves freely in the tenth dimension of having all possibilities vetted and thought through and determines which one will achieve or which group of ones will achieve what he wants. Now in that, that's the crazy part, is he lets us make choices. And when we make a choice that isn't in line, he butts us back over. He works it out. And when he wants it to work, he wants it to work, and it will work. So he uses Satan as an example for us to stand upon and look at and say, oh my gosh, this guy has no idea of what's really happening. He's just trying to get us in our thinking to live in this realm, so he's always trying to push us away from the God who's in control. That's why you want to win in the spiritual game, stand on the grace that you have, that God, trusting God will give you the grace to deal with today, because that's all the grace I need. How many need grace for last week? It's done. How many want that grace to get here for us? You know, all I need is today. All I need is faith, trusting that in this space I occupy, the enemy's trying to get me to be distracted, make choices based on this. And my flesh is attracted to this. That's why we die. This flesh has to be resurrected so that it's not attractive to disobeying God, to harming ourselves, to seeking pleasure. Because the enemy wants you to seek distraction to deal with the things that we deal with now. So that's why God says, follow me. I'll take you there. So, God allowed that to happen. Now listen, in Isaiah 46, 9 and 10, and we'll close here. I know, silence. Yeah, right. 46, 9 and 10. If you don't have this written down, you need to have this written down because this sums up everything I've been telling you for the last 40 minutes or so. He says this, remember the former things. Remember everything that proceeded from where you're at now, Isaiah's telling the people. Those of long ago on the timeline. I am God and there is no other. I alone do it all. I am God and there is none like me. There is no one like you. The enemy's not. I am the ultimate commander. None like me. I make known the end from the beginning, from ancient times, what is still to come. I freely maneuver from the ancient to the future, what is still to come. And I say my purpose will stand and I will do all that I please. My purposes will stand. They will obey me. What's stand mean? It means stand at attention. My purpose stands at attention and it gets accomplished by the power of my word. And he says, and I will do all that I please. No one can take that away from me. There is none other like me. I have everything vetted. I love that word today. I have gone through it. I have checked it out. I have worked it. So you and me, if we understand that, then we understand, even in the midst of where we're at, that God has still got a plan here. And in Romans 28, that's what makes it so real. In Romans 8, 28, it says, and we know. We know this, that what do we know? In all things. In all things. What? God works. Works in it. To maneuver it, to accomplish the goal he have. Well, what's the goal? The goal is good. It's for the good of those who love him, who have the Job relationship with him. And see, only God has the power to know where that's at. It's not about how great we are or not how great we are. I love the Lord. His word is deep in me. It's so deep, I can't. Teresa and I had a moment last night of where we had real sharing of where we're at in our journey with our daughter. And it always happens when the kids are gone because it's like now it all quiets and now that part gets real. And it was really cool. And we both basically came to the conclusion that even though we have all the hurt and the feelings and all that stuff associated with this part of this journey, we also know that God's got it under control. And that our kids are in the great place. And that we are going from here to see them. And then we will never be separated again. And then when this all comes to the conclusion that God says it will and it's all reunited again, we'll have resurrected bodies. We win. See, because when God works it out as he pleases, you know what I like about pleasing? I like winning. Winning pleases me. Losing? How many know that? Losing don't please me. I'm about to become a Rams fan. I'm not pleased with my Raiders for like 20 years now. And they don't even care about me. They've never once called me and said, hey Joe, how you doing? I got tickets for you. They've never done nothing. I've been loyal. Loyal. Boy, oh. Hey, so what is it? What is God? God has never lost. He will never lose because it pleases him to have it all in control. And he's brought us on his team. He's made us his family. We win. I can't get that out of me no matter what is going on. That saturates my mind and soul. Is that okay? Yeah, it sucks. I get it. It sucks sometimes. But ultimately, we win because he wins. And he said he'd do it. So even though I don't know how, when, where, why, all those questions I have, I trust him. And I know that his grace will enable me to get by today, and it'll be good. It'll be good. So therefore, standing in those two things, I am equipped for spiritual warfare. Yeah, there's armor we can put on, and there's all that other stuff. But armor doesn't know any good. It doesn't help us if we don't understand who the commander is. I've known many guys that played sports that put on a uniform and were totally confused. Because the commander doesn't know what he's doing. They look it though. They look good. Anybody get that point? Yeah, some of you don't. It's the only church I've seen, been in part of that. I've only been a part of a couple of them, but where like half the guys could care less about sports. It's like, well, what's your second religion? Because isn't that like supposed to be our religion part of it? I know. Now I'm just, Joe, just end it. All right, so why don't we stand up? Hey, well, you guys with kids, go up there and tell them you're welcome. And no, you're welcome because we're getting out of here not maybe a minute late, which for them is, I won't hear it at staff meeting. And it's always a plus. Dear God, help me to understand in the limited capacity I have that you are a phenomenal commander. You are the king who is in control of all things. And you work everything out the way you want it to go. Which you have said will be good. And I thank you for that. So I ask you to give me the grace I need today to navigate what I have to today. And then I have faith, God. And I ask you to pour more into me that I may trust you so that I will do what is right in your eyes. And all God's kids said, God bless you guys. Have a great day.